Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Mirsky and Company podcast, bringing you in-depth analysis on trending legal issues in media, new media, intellectual property, and privacy. I'm Andrew Mirsky, your host. I'm principal of Mirsky and Company, PLLC, a Washington, D.C. law firm with a practice in new media, intellectual property, technology, and nonprofits. Today, I'm going to discuss BitTorrent and a particular case in federal court in California that challenged the copyright validity of what one service provider of BitTorrent is doing. BitTorrent has been in the copyright news lately, although not surprisingly, after the movie studios, and in particular in the case I'm going to talk about involving Columbia Pictures, when the movie studios set their sights on bringing down yet the latest iteration of file sharing technology. First, what is BitTorrent? In short terms, BitTorrent is a file sharing technology. More specifically, it's different from Napster and Napster's peer-to-peer progeny in that BitTorrent draws down pieces of large data files from multiple computers, rather than the traditional peer-to-peer approach of single computer to single computer. And it uses a community-type structure of participating individual users. I suppose the two biggest distinctions between BitTorrent and peer-to-peer are, first, that no single source for the compiled total file contributes more than a very small portion of the total file, and second, the distributed structure gets around the file sharing problems of large data transfers that would typically demand large broadband resources. So therefore, the biggest deal about BitTorrent is its distributive approach to file sharing distributes the technology demands on the internet. Next question, why is it in the news? Why is it in the copyright news? Why is BitTorrent in the news? I'd have to say for several reasons, but mostly because of its enormous popularity among file sharers. But, of course, that begs the question, why has it garnered so much popularity among file sharers? Which is sort of easy to answer. Napster is gone, Grokster is gone, LimeWire isn't gone, but just recently settled all sorts of lawsuits with music labels. And the next target of the movie studios and the content owners is BitTorrent. So, legal issues aside, only aside for a moment, BitTorrent is an innovative exploitation of the Internet's networking and cloud computing capabilities, and it distributes large and ever larger files seamlessly and quickly. From the standpoint of a non-technologist observer like me, it is simply pretty neat how it takes advantage of distributive concepts of sharing and cost and resource burden shifting on the Internet. Of course, from the content company standpoint, it's an entirely different thing entirely, more specifically, quite law-evading. Today's discussion is specifically about a case in federal court in California involving Columbia Pictures, as I mentioned, and a number of other film studios also party to the case. They sued a BitTorrent company called ISO Hunt, together with its founder, Gary Fung. The defendant, ISO Hunt, hosts a BitTorrent service which was challenged by several major film studios, among other grounds, but basically as serving no purpose other than to facilitate the direct infringement of copyrighted films and television programs by ISO Hunt's users. And according to the film studios, doing it rather intentionally and rather willfully. Columbia Pictures moved for summary judgment in the case and got it. The court granted summary judgment, finding that ISO Hunt was liable to the studios for secondary copyright infringement, which, to be clear, Columbia had argued that the BitTorrent company, ISO Hunt, itself didn't directly infringe the copyrights, but rather improperly induced copyright infringement by its users, thus secondary copyright infringement liability. Columbia's summary judgment motion was granted, as I said, and thus the defendant, ISO Hunt, and its founder, Gary Fung, were both found liable for copyright infringement. The defendants appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, where the case is currently pending. where the appeal is currently pending. Next question, what were the relevant legal issues in this case? Many, but two in particular that we're going to discuss today of most significance. One is, as I mentioned, the inducement of copyright infringement as opposed to direct copyright infringement. And the second one, perhaps even more interesting, and explaining why this case is even more directly in the news, we'll get to this in a moment, is the safe harbor for providers of, this is called information location tools, which is a defined term under Section 512 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA, otherwise known as the Section 512 Safe Harbor. It was an issue in the case. Some of the people commenting on the case, and particularly Google, who got involved later in the case, is involved currently in the case as an amicus, argue that DMCA should not have been involved. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, the inducement issue. The film studios claimed, and they did it successfully, as I said, that ISO Hunt should be held liable for copyright infringement under a secondary liability theory. And specifically, this argument had relied on the Supreme Court's Grokster case from a couple years ago, and that case is standard for determining inducement liability. And this is a quote from Grokster. Inducement requires that the defendant has undertaken purposeful acts aimed at assisting and encouraging others to infringe copyright. Grokster was the 2005 U.S. Supreme Court case in which a peer-to-peer file sharing service, Grokster, was held liable for copyright infringement under a theory of inducing infringement by others. In the current case, the ISO Hunt case, the court had ruled in the trial level, now being appealed, that the plaintiffs, the movie studios, had proven inducement by the defendants, BitTorrent technology, and the court applied the Grokster test for inducement. A couple of interesting facts that supported the plaintiff's argument, well, there were many of them, so I'll just give a couple examples. First, there were expert witnesses for the studios who showed, using statistical samplings of the content and server logs, that something like 90 to 95% of all available content available through the defendant's service through the through ISO Hunt infringed copyrights. And even if that 90-95% number was discounted, it was still viewed as a very convincing number. Secondly, the studios offered evidence that ISO Hunt's search code was expressly designed to find copyrighted material. There was a story about this in Ars Technica, which, as it reported, one of ISO Hunt sites also displayed a list of the top 20 grossing movies in the United States with links to copies of each, while another had categories that included, and these are quotes from the Ars Technica report, but from the ISO Hunt site, high-quality DVD rips and TV show releases. Third thing that was pointed out in the case, the defendant's own blog, Gary Funk's blog, had actually made statements questioning whether copyright infringement was theft, whether it should be even something liable. Defendants were found liable for copyright infringement on a secondary inducement theory. The court then rejected ISO Hunt's DMCA arguments, the safe harbor, basing that determination on the same facts. And the court ruled that the same actions that demonstrated ISO Hunt's inducement conduct also demonstrated either actual or presumed knowledge on ISO Hunt's part to nix, undercut any DMCA safe harbor argument. So, for example, ISO Hunt had argued that much, if not most, of its offending content that resulted from user queries were generated from automatic responses. Essentially, it was the user downloads of the dot torrents that generated the infringing copying or infringing distribution of the copyrighted films and television shows. So if that argument had been accepted, this would have safely, in theory, placed ISO Hunt within the DMCA's safe harbor for information locator services, shielding the service provider, in this case ISO Hunt, from liability for content posted by its users. This really was the crux of the case for, at least from the commentary standpoint, because this is where, at least from the position of companies like Google, which, as I will talk about in a moment, got involved in the appeal, the court went off the rails with its decision. First, in a footnote, the court made this statement about .torrent files and their downloads. It may be true that the act of downloading a .torrent file is not itself a copyright infringing action, but once that .torrent file triggers the process of downloading a content file, copyright infringement has taken place. Because .torrent files automatically trigger this content downloading process, it is clear that .torrent files and content files are, for all practical purposes, synonymous. To conclude otherwise would be to elevate form over substance. See, ISO Hunt had argued that whether or not it may have done things to encourage or suggest copyright infringement or induce it, as it was held. ISO Hunt's core basic actions as embodied in its technology, the .torrent files, did not, because they could not, constitute copyright infringement. In other words, it made a sort of lack of, it said there was no nexus to copyright. Before you can claim inducement of copyright, you have to, infringement, you have to prove copyright infringement. And therefore, the user's actions in downloading the .torrent files were not copyright infringement at all, and therefore ISO Hunt couldn't be charged with having induced anything illegal. As I said, the court was not exactly receptive to that argument. Second, the court used the same point to illustrate how ISO Hunt had undercut its own DMCA safe harbor argument. This is a quote from this is language actually from the DMCA. Safe harbor. Upon obtaining such knowledge or awareness of infringing material, the service provider acts expeditiously to remove or disable access to that material. There was no factual dispute that ISO Hunt had made any efforts or done anything to comply with this. And then this is actually a quote from TechDirt on a report on the case. Explains why this case is so unusual. Most safe harbor cases, have focused on whether or not the service provider responded to notices. But in this case, the court said that there were enough red flags that even in the absence of notices, ISO Hunt should have blocked certain files. So, which brings us to the question, well, why is this case in the news? We've talked about that a little bit, but the short answer is because Google got involved. But a longer answer is because this case was an unusual instance where a court ruled that DMCA safe harbor protection was not available to provider of information location tools when the provider knew or should have known about potential or actual copyright infringement happening on its service. So what happened was on the appeal, Google, which again had not been a party to the case, filed an amicus brief, friend of the court brief, arguing that the lower court got it. They did actually argue that the court got it right when it held against ISO Hunt for inducing copyright infringement, but Google also argued that the court went too far when it further held that this same reasoning nixed the availability of the DMCA safe harbor. So in other words, that inducement of copyright infringement in and of itself should be or could be distinct and sufficiently culpable as grounds for liability for copyright infringement. You don't even have to look at the safe harbor, is what Google was saying. The court in ISO Hunt states that, this is a quote from the case, inducement liability and the Digital Millennium Copyright Act safe harbors are inherently contradictory. Inducement liability is based on active bad faith conduct aimed at promoting infringement. The statutory safe harbors are based on passive good faith conduct aimed at operating a legitimate internet business. Here, defendants are liable for inducement. There is no safe harbor for such conduct. It's this statement by the court that got Google's attention and the attention of many commentators. Google was right in arguing that mere knowledge of infringing potential or of actual infringing uses would not be enough to subject a distributor to liability. That's actually a quote from the Grokster inducement case, the Supreme Court's case from 2005, and that a long line of cases had held that this mere knowledge has not been sufficient to nix the availability of the DMCA safe harbor. The problem for Google's argument, though, is that that's actually what the DMCA safe harbor says. And more to the point, the language that Google relies on is from Grokster, not from a DMCA case. And Grokster was a case involving claims of inducement of copyright infringement, inducement, not the availability or lack thereof of the DMCA safe harbor. So relying on language from Grokster, which is an inducement of infringement case, to address a DMCA safe harbor case may not be appropriate. That's the conceptual problem here. Google argues that ISO Hunt's lack of compliance with the DMCA's takedown requirements was sufficient in and of itself to nix any DMCA safe harbor defense for Grokster, so that any further discussion, and this was Google's point, any further discussion of whether the DMCA would otherwise be available to a service provider in this situation, the whole idea of combining the inducement issue with the DMCA safe harbor is inappropriate because basically ISO Hunt didn't comply with the mechanical requirements of the DMCA in the first place. So to sum up, the problem in particularly in BitTorrent cases is, you know, the potentially lack of any potential non-infringing uses. And that really was the argument of Columbia Pictures in the ISO Hunt case. So make it, you have the perverse situation where the technology, BitTorrent, has no other actual or even potential purpose or use other than infringement. And yet, and this would be Google's point and the point of other strong advocates for the DMCA safe harbor, and yet, even though there's no conceivably could be no legal purpose for the service, despite that, further evidence is still needed of the service provider's affirmative demonstrable steps acknowledging infringement in order to undercut its own the safe harbor. So in ISO Hunt, arguably this wasn't a big deal because you had a really bad actor doing all those kind of crappy things that I was talking about. At least that's according to the district court and according to Google. So on the appeal, which is, as I said, is currently pending in the Ninth Circuit, ISO Hunt argues that, it actually argues that it does the same thing that Google does when it comes to torrents. And it's pretty easy, according to ISO Hunt, to search for torrents on the Google search engine using a file type command for torrent, T-O-R-R-E-N-T. Google probably can't argue otherwise, but Google can probably argue against, first of all, the egregious inducement activities that ISO Hunt did do, and also ISO Hunt's problems with responsiveness and compliance with the DMCA safe harbor mechanics. I want to thank our audience for joining us today, as always. I also want to thank our podcast producer, Thomas Yarnell. I'm your host, Andrew Mirsky, and you can reach me at 202-339-0303 or Andy at Mirsky Legal, M-I-R-S-K-Y Legal.com. I did mention my blog. I talk about this case with a little bit further detail. It is a bit complicated, so please definitely refer to the blog on this, which is www.mirskylegal.com, M-I-R-S-K-Y Legal.com. Thank you all for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week.